holding by the Gemara after the second Mishnah, Lamed Hei Amud Beis, eight lines from the bottom. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, we had a case, we talked about various cases, what constitutes the lashon of a shvur by which one can be swear the edim? Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, okay. Did I say Amud Beis? I meant Amud Aleph. Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, eight lines from the bottom. So we learned in the Mishnah that we have various cases. The person says to the Edim, Mashbiani Aleichem, I am Mashbia on you, or Mitzavani Aleichem, I'm commanding you, or Isarchem Ani, I'm binding you. Then we said all of those, they're chal. So the question is, the Gemara asks, Mashbiani Aleichem, my karma. And if he says, I'm Mashbia you, how does that make a difference? He didn't use Hashem's name, he didn't use any kinnui of Hashem. Why is that? Why does that mean?
Normally,
you would expect that it should be that you have to use Hashem's name. I'm going to be
hurt by it.
Yeah. Okay, but what he means is like this. When he says mashbi ani aleichem, he means I am being mashbiya you using the kind of shvur that is written in the Torah. We're talking in the Torah. You have various places where Moshe beswears the Jewish people to keep the Torah, the Kohen beswears the Soita when it comes to that, etc. Or mitzava ani aleichem means mitzava hamur b'Torah. When he uses the word mitzava ani aleichem, he's referring to the mitzvahs that are in the Torah. Where you have the expression Eloi Mitzvahs, for example, in regards to Nedarim. Or Eisarchem Ani means Be'itzer HaMu'atara. When he says Eisarchem, that I'm binding you, means using the kind of Isser that's mentioned in the Torah. Okay. And in that case, you don't necessarily need Hashem's name, because by invoking the Shavua, or what have you, in the Torah, that implies Hashem's name. Omalei Abayas says, however, fine, but what about this that we learn in a Braisa that Rabbiya says, and here the fourth one that they can be chayv, he says, it means in chains, in bonds of iron. So Kevalchemani means like I'm chaining.
What's the context of the
pasuk? The context of the pasuk is the lesser machayim zikim that was saying that to tie up the kings, the hostile kings with chains and then b'chav lebarzel last them to kotzav v'hodor l'chol chasidav ha'olus. So we see that so the word kovel, which means chains, and kovel chamani harei l'chayoven. Then if he says kovel chamani kovel chamani whatever harei l'chayoven, then they're also chayim. Kovel b'arayt in ikdiv, but where does it ever say in chumash anything about kovel as a lashon of a shvur that you should be able to apply it? Mele, the other three, fine. Mashbiya, again, we have. Mitzava, we have. And Oisalchem, fine. You have shvur isur, as the Torah mentioned. But you don't have the word kovel in that context. Mashbiya, mitzava, and Oisalchem, but not kovelchem. Elo, Amar Abaye, but no, Abaye says, Hokakama, what the Mishnah means is like this. He says, Mashbiya ani aleichem b'shvur. He's saying, I'm being mashbiya you with shvur. And so Rashi adds the detail that what Abaye, and this is how most of the Rishonim learn, that Abaye is saying you are in fact mentioning a name or a kinnui of Hashem in this connection. It's not just, in other words, the Mishnah is not just saying that you say Mashbiyani Aleichem, and that would be enough. It would have to be Mashbiyani Aleichem using Hashem's name or using a kinnui of Hashem. A couple of the Rishonim, the Rashba. That's how most of the Rishonim learn, and that's the halacha. The Rashba learns differently. He says, after all, he says, Abaye didn't mention anything about Hashem's name. So therefore, he understands that there's two ways. You could have where you use the word Bishvua, and then you don't need Hashem's name. Or you could have where you didn't use the word Bishvua, and then you have to use Hashem's name. So the way he understands the Gemara, you could say, Oisal Chamani Bishvua, let's say, and that would be valid, even though you didn't use Hashem's name. Or you could say, Oisal Chamani in the name of Hashem. And that would also be valid. So one or the other.
In the name of Hashem,
yeah.
How do we know it's in the name of Hashem?
Because that, if you don't have the root of Shavua, then for sure you need a name of Hashem or a kinnui of Hashem.
So
it's one or the other, says the Rashba. Again, the Rashi and most of the Rishonim understand that it means that the primary point is that you use Hashem's name.
Right.
So then if you use one of the Lashonis of the Mishnah plus in the name of Hashem or in the name of Chanun Verachom, etc., then it works. According to the Rashba, what it is, either you say Mashbi Ani Aleichem in the name of Hashem, or you say Mashbi Ani Aleichem B'Shavua, and the fact that you would say B'Shavua, you would say Mashbi Ani Aleichem B'Shavua, B'Shem Hashem. B'Shem Hashem, yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah Ba'al that the various names of Hashem that you might use, Ba'al of Dalad, meaning the name Adnai, the Yud Kei, the Shakai, the Tzvokos, and then we had Tinurim, B'Chanun V'Rachom, B'Erech HaTayim, B'Rach Chesed. So the question is, remember the Hanun v'Rachum Shemes Ninu. Are you telling me that Hanun and Rachum are actual names of Hashem? They're not full-fledged names of Hashem. They're kinuyim. They're descriptive terms about Hashem. Or a mini, I have a contradiction. A Braita says, yes, Shemes Shenim Chokin. There are certain kinds of names and descriptions of Hashem that are allowed to be erased. If you miswrote them or whatever, v'yesh shemesh enim kochin, and then there are names of Hashem that are not allowed to be erased. It's an issue in the Torah to erase Hashem's name. Well, that's the Elohim shemesh enim kochin. What are the ones that are not allowed to be erased? To go in kale, elekecha, elekim, elekechem, efyasha efya, very appropriate with today's chumash. Aleph dalad, v'yurke, shakai tzvokas, harelo enim kochin. All these names are not allowed to be erased. Agrot changes, Elekecha to Eleka. Okay, you have, there's different ways of counting. There's different ways of counting. For example, if you're counting Elekecha, Elekim, and Elekechem as separate or not, if you count Ekye as one of the names, actually, that Amnon didn't even mention it.
It is unusual.
We only have it in our parasha. We only have it in parasha Shmos. But the Rambam doesn't even list it. Apparently, he had a different Dirsa in our Gemara. But there's different ways of counting, whether you say altogether there are seven names that are specific to Hashem, or 10. Seven or 10 non-erasable names. And Alpi Kabbalah, they're related to the seven midas, and the 10 spheres, and whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Avol, but continues the Braita, HaGodol, HaGibur, HaNoira, HaAdir, HaChazok, HaAmit, HaIzuz, all these that are describe Hashem's greatness and his power, his fearsome, the glorious one, the strong one, indirect references, yeah. The mighty one, Ha'izuz, the strong one, Chanun v'Rachum, merciful and gracious, Erech Apayim, Erech Chesed, Harel and Imchokin, all those kinds of things can be erased. So they're not actual names of Hashem, whereas our Mishnah seems to imply that they're actual names of Hashem, and therefore if you beswear the Edom by them, then they're considered a valid shvut. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, Masnissin b'mishahu Chanun, b'mishahu Rachum. Our Mishnah doesn't mean he didn't just say the word Chanun. He said, in the name of the one, by the one who is Chanun, by the one who is Rachum. So therefore, that's different. If you just say, I'm beswearing you by Rachum, no, that's not a name of Hashem. But if you say, by the one who is Chanun, or the one who is Rachum, then that amounts to a reference to Hashem.
You have to say both? Or
you would have to say, Mishahu Chanun. No, one or the other. One or the other. The Mishahu Chanun, the same thing would apply to the other terms that we use in the Braita. You could say the Mishahu Amit, the Mishahu Izu, etc. Right?
Okay,
so then it refers to Hashem. Not necessarily that it's not erasable, but at least that it counts as a Shavu. That it counts as a Shavu for purposes of Shavu'ot.
So therefore it's not erasable?
No, that doesn't necessarily mean. Omalei Rava, Ihochi, Bashamayim of Arif Nami. Well, in that case, if you're going to argue like that, what about when we say you beswear them Bashamayim of and we said that that doesn't work at all because Rashamayim of Aretz is not a name of Hashem. Why not? If you're going to understand the same way as you're understanding the Chanun v'Rachum of the Mishnah, Mishahu Chanun Mishahu Rachum. Exactly. It should mean B'Misha Hashamayim v'Aretz Shalai Kama. It should mean by the one to whom heaven and earth belong. Yeah. The Gemara says Halchi Hashta. How do you think to compare those two cases?
In that case, since you don't have anyone else who is intrinsically called Rachum or who is intrinsically called Chanun, Vade B'Mishu Chanun, Vade B'Mishu Rachum, then we have to insert the word B'Mishahu in order to make it work. Because otherwise, what does it mean? When you say Chanun, when you say Rachum, automatically it implies B'Mishahu Chanun, B'Mishahu Rachum, because there is nobody else.
But over here, given the Ikka Shamayim V'Aretz, but Shamayim V'Aretz do exist.
So therefore, they exist as well. I mean, right, but they exist, and yeah. So therefore,
Vashamayim of Aretz, comma. Therefore, we should have to assume that he's swearing them Vashamayim of Aretz, but literally by heaven or by earth, and that's not a valid shvur because heaven and earth are not the Eibishter. They're not Kinuyim for Hashem. So that would be the difference. Therefore. So we still could say, therefore. That if he says Rachum B'Chanun, then it means B'Misha Shmai Rachum B'Misha Shmai Chanun. That it actually means Hashem Himself. Some of the Mefarshim say on that basis. Some of the Rishonim say that on that basis. And in fact, In the end, you don't even need to say the Mishahu. Just the fact that you said Rachum or Chanun by themselves implies you mean Hashem, because who else is it going to refer to? As opposed to, if you want to say Shemayim Ba'aretz, you would have to say by Hashem who created Shemayim Ba'aretz or something. Because Shemayim Ba'aretz
is so straightforward.
Yeah. Interesting thing, the Ritva talks about Rabbeinu Yonah as a Pirush Antilim, and he explains the Chosik over there, Zorach B'choshach Ola Yisharim, Chanun V'rachum V'tzadik. And Rabbeinu, Zorach B'choshach Ola Yisharim, light shines in darkness for the upright, Chanun V'rachum V'tzadik, the gracious, the merciful, and the tzadik. The standard explanation is those last three adjectives refer to Hashem, who creates the light for the tzaddikim. Rabbeinu Yonah says it refers to the tzaddikim themselves. How does that fit with all Gemara over here? So the Rabbeinu, the Ritva answers, but in the Lashon Bnei Adam, still the word Chanun or the word Rachum generally means Hashem himself. Yes, in that context it could mean the tzaddik, but it doesn't. But the Lashon Bnei Adam it does.
Generally,
yeah. Okay, fine. Turn it up on him. So now,
that's the halacha.
Okay, so now since we talked about in the mission of the various and the bright of it now, the various names of Hashem, so now we're going to digress a minute to talk about the rules of Kedusha of various names of Hashem. We just said that there are names of Hashem that are not allowed to be erased. What if you wrote only part of the name? Turn it up on cost of Aleph Lamed Melikim, if you wrote the letters Aleph and Lamed from the name Elikim, even though you didn't finish off the whole name, you're not allowed to erase it because Aleph Lamed by itself constitutes the name of Hashem, Kael. Or Yud-Kei Me-Hashem, the same way if you wrote Yud-Kei out of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, same thing, it's an independent name of Hashem. Even if you had in mind to do something that's bigger, the bigger thing. Now, we're not, well, yeah, so yeah, Harei Zeh Enenim, then you're not allowed to erase it.
Then you wrote
Aleph Lamed. No, okay, well, you didn't have in mind that you're writing Hashem's name, but the point is, if you were writing the name of a kid and you had in mind it's Hashem's name and you wrote Aleph Lamed, yeah. On the other hand, Shin, Dalad, and Shakai. On the other hand, if you wrote the Shin and the Dalad of the name Shakai, or Aleph, Dalad, Me Adnai, or you wrote the Aleph and Dalad from the name Adnai, Agos Abak also adds on the basis of the Yerushalmi and Megillah, if you wrote Aleph, Hey, from Etia, or Tzadik, Beis, Mitzvokai, or another one, you wrote Tzadik and Beis, Mitzvokai, all of them, Harei and Yimcha, all of them can be erased because those don't constitute a name on their own. Church just brings on Amar Aleph from Rabbeinu Hanan, though, who is not girdous about the Aleph Dalet of Adnai. Because he says, Aleph Adnai is the usual way we pronounce Hashem, the Shem Ben Arba, the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei is usually pronounced Adnai. Therefore, the name Adnai has a higher level of Kedusha than most of these other names. Even the two letters Aleph Dalet from it would not be allowed to be erased, says Rabbeinu Hanan. Both opinions are brought in Shulchan Aruch.
What's
the halacha is, ideally you shouldn't, but I think in a pinch you may be allowed to, yeah. As opposed to the other ones, Yud-Kei and Aleph Lamed, you're definitely not. Okay. That's the point. Yud-Kei and Aleph Lamed are independent names of their own. Okay. Rabbi Yehudi, and Tzvokos Kulanim. Rabbi Yehudi says, Tzvokos, the whole thing can be erased. It's not a name of Hashem. Shalom Nikra, Tzvokos, El Al Shem Yitzvah. Why is Hashem called in many places in Tanakh Hashem Tzvokos, Hashem Alekim Tzvokos, or whatever? He's called that after the name of the Jewish people. Shanema, Vahotseki, Yetziv, Oysayat, Ami, Bnei, Tzvom, Eretz, and Shem. I will take out my legions. Tziv Oisai, my army, my people, Bnei Yisrael, from Eretz Mitzrayim. So when I call Hashem, Hashem Tzvokos, says Rabbi Yossi, it doesn't mean Hashem whose name is Tzvokos. It means Hashem, Hashem, the God of the army, the God of the Tzvokos, of the Jewish people, and therefore it's not a name of Hashem. Amar Shmuel ain halacha ke Rabbi Yossi, however Shmuel says the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, Tzvokos is considered a name.
And therefore
it's not erasable. Tzadik Beis commit would be, even Tzadik Beis Aleph commit could be, but not the whole name Tzvokos could not be erased.
It's funny because all the Goyim, they tell the Ruka, and they don't understand.
That's another matter, yeah. Okay, that's actually the Gemara in Sochem, actually near the end, discusses the question, is Halalukah two words, or is it one word? If it's one word, then the Yud-Kei is not necessarily a name of Hashem. Then it means like great praises or something like that. As opposed to if it's two words, Halalukah, then it would be two things, praise, ha, Hashem.
It could be one word.
It could be, just like you have at the end of Shir HaShirim, for example, you have a word, Shal Eves Yah, which means an intense fire. And you have some, yeah. Okay, anyway. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the halacha is not, the halacha.
The main consensus
is that it, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I say the Gemara brings a few different possibilities over there, yeah.
Okay. Where is it then?
At the end of Sochem, yeah, in the last letter. Okay. So that's the halacha, is not like Rabbi Yossi. Tzvokos is considered a name.
why do we think that halacha is like Rav Yossi when he's only a yachid? Tosfos says because usually Rav Yossi always has a good rationale for what he says. Rav Yossi mukah yimoy. Therefore, we think maybe the halacha is like him. Another reason is because in the Yerushalmi, we have this much of the sugya is also in the Yerushalmi and Megillah. When it talks about the dinim over there of writing Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzot, Rav Yossi mentions over there that the sofer, the expert sofer in Yerushalayim, would erase the name Tzvakos when necessary. So therefore, we would say Ma'aseh Rav. We have a practical thing that they did that way. But nevertheless, the halacha is not like that. So that's the Yerushalmi mentions that the Rav Yossi knew that that's how they used to do it. Okay, fine. Turn it up on him. More dinim about erasing names. Kol ha'tofel l'shem, anything that is appended to Hashem's name, any letter that's appended to Hashem's name, ben melafano or ben melachrov, whether it's before the name as a prefix or whether it's after it, a suffix, harei ze nimchak, you're allowed to erase it. The fun of Kesad, what are examples of prefixes before Hashem's name? La Hashem, and the word La Hashem, the Lamed is Nimchak. Ba Hashem Beis Nimchak. Ba Hashem Vav Nimchak. Me Hashem Mem Nimchak. She Hashem Shin Nimchak. Ha Hashem, which is one such place in, there's one such place in Yirmiyahu. Hey Nimchak. Ka Hashem Kach Nimchak. Those are all the seven prefixes that you can have in Lashon Kodesh that for nouns. I'm not real. You have four more prefixes that can be used for verbs only, but I'm not real sure why the Gemara had to list all seven of them individually. But okay, anyway,
it could have just said
yeah. Okay, La'achrav Kate said, what are examples of suffixes Hashem's name? Elakei Nu, the Nunvav is Nimchak. Elakei Hem, the Hey Mem is Nimchak. Elakei Chem, Chof Mem Nimchak. However, Acherim, which usually means Rameir says, no, La'achrav Einin Nimchak Shekar Kitshei Hashem. Suffixes are not allowed to be erased because they're already niskadish together with the name of Hashem. When you write L-A-K and then you write Chem, for example, the Chof Mem partakes of the Kedusha of the word before it. Amarapuna Halacha Ka'acherim. Ravuna says the Halacha is in fact like Acherim, so therefore suffixes are not allowed to be erased. However, the Rambam says you would only get makas malus for them. They're not included in the Isra Minatorda, loifasim came mashem alekechem. They have a lower level of susha. Therefore, a person who erases them gets makas malus. Interesting, there's a verse from the Korshin to Magid that says a deeper idea behind this. He says, Hanitpal Lashem means somebody who, so you have somebody who develops an avodo, who develops in becoming an ovid, like he should be. But then, how does he look at himself? Does he look at himself that he's lefonov, that he's before Hashem, like he can accomplish it independently of Hashem's help? Well, then he's nimchak, then he's not necessarily going to have a kiyum. As opposed to if he's la'achrov, if he realizes Hashem's help came first, and that's what enabled him to become what he comes, then he's any nimchak, then he has a permanence. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
This is a question at the market. Okay.
When did he live?
He lived in the time of the Alphabet. Okay.
Related to
him? No, he wasn't related, but they were both Talmidim of the Mizrahi Magid, I think. Okay. Okay. So now we have a Simon Avraham Delatia, Avraham Delatia Lenovitz to give us Binyamin Shmuel Shloima Daniel Simon. This is a Simon for the various episodes and stories that we're going to have in Tanakh, where you have names that are equivocal. Are they referring to Hashem or are they referring to some other entity? We're going to have rules. We're going to lay out rules. Which ones are kodesh and which ones are chol? Which ones are you not allowed to erase and which ones you can? Because obviously, for example, a word like Elikim can mean Hashem sometimes, but it can also, on the other hand, can mean Getchke, Lahabil. It can mean Dayonim, as we learned in Sanhedrin. I'll show you Ashir and Elikim.
Elikim is more.
No, sometimes have Elikim. Hashem Elikim Acherim Lo Yisakiru, for example. Yeah, well, it still says the word Elikim. Yeah? Lo Yilacha Elikim Acherim Alpana. You have a lot of examples like that. So you have, for example, also kale can mean, also kale can be used as, So we have to figure out in the word Adnai, sometimes it can mean Hashem, sometimes it can mean my master. So we have to figure out which is which. Okay.
So it's in the same way?
Yeah, they're all written in the, yeah. Okay. Number one, Kol Shemes Hamurim HaTorah B'Avraham, Kodesh, all the Shemes that are written in connection with Avraham, primarily we're talking about at the beginning of Parashas Vayera, when you have the Malachim appear to Avraham, all of those names are Kodesh. Except for the one in the following pasuk, Shenemar, at the beginning of the parasha you have there, after he sees the Malachim, by Yoimar, he says, Adnai, im no matzati chen beinecha, if I've found favor in your eyes, according to this explanation, the word by Yoimar
Vayomer Adnai, he doesn't mean Adnai as in Hashem, he's addressing the Malachim. He's addressing my master, the Malachim, so therefore it's not Kodesh. Vayomer Adonai, Yimnomototi Chen Ve'enacha, my master, if I found favor in your eyes, please don't pass away from me, stay here and I'll bring your meal. First of all, Adonai is Loshen Rabin, it's my master. But second of all, Rashi points out in a few places that words involving mastership or kingship or ownership or whatever, a lot of times, there is masters, there is superiors, they're malachim, he's a human being. So they identified. So it's respectful to speak to people that way. Even he didn't even know they were malachim necessarily. Remember, he thought they were Arabs, they worshipped the dust on their feet and whatever. But it's still a general kind of. No, he didn't necessarily know until they told him the news about the Torah was going to have a baby. But So at that point, you're just addressing them in a respectful way. So in that case, where it means my masters, and yeah, first of all, there were three malachim. Second of all, even if he's talking to the middle malach, sometimes when you're speaking just like in many languages, and in Yiddish, for example, you say the word ear, which is plural, when you're speaking in singular to a person out of respect.
Yeah.
So the same way, Hebrew is somewhat the same way. So according to that, it's chol. According to that, it's not referring to Hashem, it's referring to the malach, or the malachim, whatever. On the other hand, Chanina ben Achi Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Meshum Rabbi Elazar Amud Dor Yomru, Chanina, the nephew of Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, say in the name of Rabbi Elazar Amud Dor, no, Ach Zeh Kodesh. The word Adnai over here is Kodesh, that Avraham is addressing Hashem and asking him, please don't go away while I tend to the guest. So the Gemara says, Kaman Azva Hoda Omer Vihoda Omer Rav, Golach, not just Ochen Yot Makbolos Meshkina. Which opinion does it follow? The opinion that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rab, famous expression, that welcoming guests is greater than receiving the Shekhinah, welcoming than receiving the Shekhinah. Kaman Ka'is Azur. That would be, according to that pair, according to Hanania and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's explanation, that Adnai over there is addressed to Hashem. Hashem, you've just been speaking to me by Yera El of Hashem, but please wait here while I attend to the guest, and then you can continue speaking to me. We see that Avraham is willing to set aside Hashem, his audience with Hashem, in order to greet his guests and take care of them. So we see that Hachnasas Avraham is greater than Akbalas Peneshkina. That would only work according to the second explanation. According to the first explanation, if he's telling the Malachim to wait here because I'm going to serve you, you don't learn anything about the Shekhinah. Right. As a side thing, by the way, before we get off of this, I mean, primarily, again, when we say over here, Kol Shemes Hamurim Batorah Ba'Avraham, primarily we're talking about over here the one at the beginning of Parashat Vayera, in that story with Avraham and the Malachim. But there is an interesting one later on in Parashat Vayera also. I want to mention it as a side thing, because there's a fascinating explanation in connection with it. You have in the story over there where Avimelech kidnaps Sarah, and then Hashem warns him, you better return her, etc. So Avraham explains to Avimelech, why am I calling Sarah, why am I going around all the time calling Sarah my sister? He says, Vayhi kasher hisu oisi elikim mibeis avi. When Elikim made me wander from my father's house. So I realized that I'm going to be on the road, I'm also going to be in danger, so I asked her to do me a favor and present herself as my sister. So what does Vayhi kasher hisu oisi elikim mean? So Rashi begins by saying, Unkelos translated as he translated. So Rashi doesn't elaborate. Unkelos translates over there, he translates, he breaks up the sentence like this, Vayhi kasher hisu, when the goyim went astray, Elikim mi beis avi, Hashem brought me close to him from my father's house, and then therefore, and ever since then I've been wandering around. Rashi himself explains that the Hisu Elikim goes together, that it means that Elikim there means Hashem, that Abraham was saying when Hashem made me wander. I once saw a fascinating explanation. In that case, it is Kodesh, right? Well, according to Uncle, it's also Kodesh, because it means Elikim mi beis avi, that Hashem brought me, took me from my father's house. But I once saw a fascinating explanation. What does it actually mean with this expression about Uncle Shatirgin Mashatirgin? He translated what he translated. It's an odd expression for Rashi to use. The word is, again, what is Uncle saying? When all the Goyim went astray after their Getchkes, Hashem brought me close to serve him. That, in a nutshell, the story of Uncle's own life. He was born a Goy, he was born the nephew of the Roman Emperor, and he became a Ger. So Tirgin Mashatirgin, he translated in this pasuk what he had experienced in his own life. Rashi is implying.
Yes. That's very nice.
Yeah. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. when it comes to the story of Loit, later on and for the next thing in Vayera, you have the Malachim come and visit Loit. All the names that it mentions in connection with Loit. Now, by the way, most of the Mephoshim say that when we say over here Kol Shemus, obviously we're not referring to any time it says the name Yud Kei Vod Kei. There's no question that refers to Hashem. The question is when it says words like Adnai or Elikim or whatever. Yeah.
The non-obvious words.
The non-obvious ones, right. So So all of the ones that it mentions by Loit are chol. They're non-holy because they refer to the malachim. Chutz mizeshu kodesh, except for the following one, which is kodesh. Now, really, when you get down to it, in the story of Loit over there, you only have two times. You have the one time at the beginning when he sees the malachim and says, hine no adonai suruna, please, my masters, come turn aside to my house. And then you have 20 psukim later when they're about to destroy Sodom, and he says to them the pasuk that we're going to quote over here, which the Gemara is going to explain, is actually kodesh. So you really only have two names by Loit. Why are we using the word kol shemus? So with one explanation is just that for parallelism, we mentioned Kol Shemus Amoris Bavram, we're going to mention Kol Shemus Amoris Benavit, etc. So therefore we mention Kol Shemus by Loit also, even though there's really only two of them, and one is Chol and one is Kodesh.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Which one by Loit is Kodesh? Shenema, the passage says, Vayomer Loit Aleihem Al No Adnai. He says to them, please know, my master. Behold now, your servant has found, meaning I have found favor in your eyes, and therefore, please, that you've done me this favor to keep me alive.
Right.
So on the face of it, if we didn't know better, we would say that he's addressing the Malach. Please, my master, the Malach, I've found favor in your eyes. You've saved me, so now let me run away to the city of Soyar, etc. But no, it doesn't. He's not addressing
Thanks
the Malach. He must be addressing Hashem. Because when he's saying that you did me a favor to keep me alive, he can't be referring to a malach. A malach has no ability to decide who lives and who dies. Only Hashem does. It must refer to Hashem, who has the power to decide who dies and who lives. So in other words, what he's saying is, he says to them, to the malachim, Alma, please know, and then he turns to Hashem. Adnai, hine no mosa abdechokhen ve'necha, Hashem, I found favor in your eyes that you sent the malachim to save me, so now let me run away to Soyar.
So he's addressing
the malachim, and then he continues addressing Hashem. Okay.
Nice.
Next. Kol Shemus Hamurim B'Novos, all the names that are mentioned in connection with the story of Novos, so this is the guy we learned about in Sanhedrin, that he had a vineyard next to Ahab's palace, and Ahab wanted to buy it, and Novos turned him down, and Ahab ended up, Izevel arranged to have Novos framed and executed. So you have, so again, now you have at the beginning of the story over there, when Ahab wants to buy
She was Ahab's wife, right.
So you have at the beginning of the story when Ahab wants to buy the place, and Novos says, Cholilo me Hashem, Chas v'Shalom, that I should sell you my ancestor's property. There, obviously, the name Yudkei Vodkei refers to Hashem. The question is, that what the Gemara is dealing with is later on in the story, twice, there's mention the idea that what Izevel tells the false Edom to say against Novos, and what they actually try and convict Novos for on this false Edom is Berach Novos Elikim v'melech, that Novos is cursed Elikim and the king. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are those Elikim? Are those referring to a Getchke? Are they referring to Getchke, that she's saying, I want you to try him for blaspheming this brother God? She was practicing Avodah Zarah, right. So does Elikim there mean the Getchke? Yes. Or does it mean that they're trying to make it look like a legal thing, like he blasphemed Hashem? Yeah. So they're Kodesh. They're Kodesh. Mm-hmm. It means Hashem. It means that one thing is, because first of all, Marshall says two things. First of all, the word Berach itself is a euphemism. Really, we're talking about cursing. If it was referring to Avodah Zarah, why would the prophet have to use a euphemism? It should record that she said to them that I want you to come and testify that Kilo, the Pesach wouldn't mind quoting it in the word Kilo, so that itself shows that it must have been an Edom still. Second of all, Marshall says also that Edom may have been corrupt, not necessarily with the Dayanim corrupt. They may have thought that this is a genuine judicial proceeding. They heard out these Edom, they didn't realize the Edom are hired, etc. So therefore, now, and they're not going to be trying him for blaspheming and Avodah Zarah, they're going to be trying him for blaspheming Hashem. But, okay, so that's what it is. The Micha Chol, on the other hand, all the names that I mentioned in connection with Micha, this is the story of Petel Micha, towards the end of Sefer Shoftim, all of those are Chol. So Rashi gives some examples. At the beginning over there, in the middle of the story, it describes how Micha had a base of a kin. Doesn't mean a house of Hashem, it means a house for his getchkin. A few psukim before, Micha's mother says that I've been makdish the silver to Hashem from my hand, that it should be given to you.
So what does it mean? No. So Rashi understands it, that what it means is that Lashem over there obviously is Kodesh. So Yud Kei Vav Kei never refers to anything other than Hashem. However, what she means is, I made this money also to me like Hekdesh to Hashem, until, except for the fact that I plan to give it to you to make this idol. So therefore, Lashem there means Hekdesh to Hashem, but I'm treating this money as if it were Hekdesh to Hashem, meaning that it's off limits to me until it's given to have the statue made. Because you had people in those times who believed in Hashem, but also worshipped statues. This is Micha's mother, yeah. So different other Rishonim talk about that, though. Tosfos actually earlier, we had about 6 blocks ago, Tosfos mentioned the possibility that maybe in this story over here, maybe even in the next story, maybe the name Yud Kei Vav Kei is in fact referring that she's calling the Getchke by the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Ramban says it's very hard to accept that. He was a person from Shevet Ephraim, so we know the backstory is the famous thing in the Medrash, that he was one of the children who had been crushed in the wall by the Mitzrayim to make up for the 4 bricks at the end of our parasha, and Moshe was bothered by that. He took this child out from there, and he grew up to be this Micha. So he made this pestle. So from described over there how his mother was very upset that this large sum of money had been stolen, and then Micha admits that he did it, and she says, actually, I wasn't planning to keep it for myself. I was planning to use it to make a statue, and she gives it to Micha, and he makes the statue and sets up a whole temple over there. Anyway.
It was
in the time of the Shoftim. Yeah. There's different opinions whether it was the beginning or the end or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so b'micha kol, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, b'novos kodesh, Rabbi Eliezer says, I agree, when it comes to novos, all the names mentioned over there are kodesh. However, b'micha, it's not so simple that they're all chol. Yesh mehen chol, yesh mehen kodesh. Some of them are chol, some of them are kodesh. Aleph lamed chol, all the ones where it says elikim, all are chol, they're all referring to the sketchka. Yud kei kodesh, all the ones where it says yud kei bal kei, are all, so he's put the difference, right? And one of the examples Rashi gives is at one point after Micha has his statue set up, and he's gotten even a priest from Shevet Levi to be a priest for it. Bar-Basra was actually a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. So at one point, some people from Shevet Dan passed through. They're on their way to scout out a new land for themselves, because most of their land was occupied by Pushkin. So they go to this Yehonasan, the Kohen, the priest of this idol over there, to ask, are we going to be successful? And he tells them, Noicha Hashem Darkachem, your way is before Hashem. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying he actually meant Hashem. He didn't mean I'm wishing you success in the name of this idol. He actually meant I'm wishing you success in the name of Hashem. Yeah. Okay.
So therefore
it means it's Kodesh. Chutz mizeh she'alef lamed b'hu kodesh, except Rabbi Eliezer says the following name that says Elikim in connection with that story is kodesh. Well, the definitive opinion is like the first opinion that says that all the Elikims there are chol, except for the following one, where it says at the end of the story that the statue lasted kol yemei hayoyt beis Elikim b'shiloi, as long as the house of Hashem stood in Shiloi. That definitely means the Mishkan of Hashem. So the word Elikim there definitely means Hashem. But all the other Elikims in that story all refer to the Getchke, and again, according to some of the Rishonim, maybe even some of the Havayim. Okay, onward. Kol Shemus Hamuris Begivas Binyamin. What about the various names that are mentioned in the story of Givas Binyamin, the story of Pelagish Begiva?
Right. Which
so
is Giva the Tan.
This is also right at the end of Sefer Shoftim. You have this Levi. We learned about a bit of the story in Gittin. That you have this Levi passing through there with his Pelagish. The people of the town were ready to break down the door and use him for Mishkav Zachar. So instead he sent out his Pelegesh, and they abused her all night, and in the morning she was found dead. So then her husband takes her home, publicizes the matter throughout all the Jewish people. Everybody is outraged. They tell Shevet Binyamin, hand these guys over. Shevet Binyamin refuses. This is an internal affair. You guys miss out. And everybody went to a... I wasn't getting into that level of detail, but yeah, he cut her body into pieces and sent it all around there. It's just, whatever. We don't have to get... This is her husband, the Pelagish's husband. This is this lady. Anyway, everybody is roused to action, and they all go to war against Shevet Binyamin. So, three times it says over there that they asked, that three times it says there that
they knew they were not from Binyamin.
What do you mean they knew they're not from Binyamin? The people of the town of Diba are from Binyamin.
From Binyamin.
Yeah, that's.
And this guy, when he's Pelegesh, was from which
tribe? He himself was a Levi. He lived in Har Ephraim.
Right.
She was originally from Beit Lechem. They're passing through Giva.
So it's not an internal thing.
Shevet Binyamin argued, we'll deal with these wrongdoers ourselves. You other Shvatim don't have to mix in. Whereas everybody else argued not like that. Yeah. So, okay, anyway. We don't know. That's another question. All we know is that the v'loy ovu b'nei Binyamin, because they didn't want to listen. So they didn't want to listen to the national Sanhedrin that said you have to hand these guys over. They have to be punished on a national level, and therefore everybody went to war against them. So
the Sanhedrin decided.
Yeah. But you have to remember also, we learned in Masechta Sanhedrin, we learned that every Shevet had its top level, based in as well.
Right.
So in other words, what happened is, it was Lahavdil, like nowadays, you have states' rights versus federalism. You have Lahavdil, you have Bnei Binyamin arguing that the states' rights matter,
the Sanhedrin and Yerushalayim decide.
They didn't hold that the Sanhedrin and Yerushalayim has jurisdiction on this. Okay, whatever it is, that was the story. So now what happened was like this. Three times the Jewish people asked whether they're going to the rest of the Shvatim, that is, asked whether they should go to war.
Against Binyamin.
The first two times, the first time it says Vayishalu Elakim, they asked Elakim, and that's what we have to figure out. What does Elakim mean? On the face of it, it means the Rumatum, but that's what we have to figure out. So they asked Elakim, who should go, who should lead the battle? The answer is Yehuda should go first. The tribe of Yehuda should go first. That day, Bnei Binyamin win the battle. They kill 22,000 members of the allied Shvatim. They try again. They ask again. They go and ask. And all the other Shvatim. The 22,000 casualties weren't necessarily only from Yehuda. They were from all the Shvatim combined, I guess. Whatever. Okay, then they try again. They ask Hashem, should we go to war again? And Hashem says, go up against him. And again, they go up against him. And this time, 18,000 of their soldiers are killed. Then they try for the way. That's what they figure out. Then they try for a third time. They ask the Urim Baturim, should we continue going to war or should we stop? And Hashem says, go, tomorrow they will be given over into your hands. And sure enough, the next day they beat Shevet Binyamin and 26,000 members of Shevet Binyamin, almost the whole Shevet was wiped out.
It's enormous numbers.
It is. Anyway, the point is like this. Okay, so let's get back to the Gemara then. Kol Shemus Hamurim B'Givas Binyamin. So all the names that I mentioned in connection with the story of Givas Binyamin, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a Choyl. Rabbi Eliezer says that they're all, except for the last one, that is, are Choyl. They're all not referring to Hashem. They're all referring to Getchkes. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a Chodesh. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, they're all Chodesh. Rabbi Eliezer says, how could you say the first two times it's referring to Hashem? Hashem doesn't promise to not do it. If Hashem told them to go to war, why do they have in those 2 days 40,000 casualties? Why do they lose? Obviously, what it must be is those first 2 days they were asking Getchkes, and therefore they were unsuccessful. And on the third day, they finally realized, you know what, we got to ask the Urim Baturim, and therefore they were successful. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua, Mashiv Tiach Osa. No. You're misunderstanding the story, says Rabbi Yeshua. Each time they asked the Urim V'Tumim, and what Hashem promised is what he did. They asked to go to war, and he told them, go to war. They didn't check, they didn't clarify their question, are we going to be successful, or are we not going to be successful? No, it's not. Especially the first time, they're not even asking, should we go to war? It's like, we've already decided we got to go to war. The only question is which Shevet should be the leader. So fine, you want to go to war? Because hey, go to war. The answer is Yehuda. You only get answered from the Urim V'Tumim what you ask. If they had asked, are we going to be successful in this war, then they would have gotten an answer the first two times, no. But
they should have asked.
Never mind that. But the point is, they should have asked, are we going to be successful? Whereas the third time, they clarify, should we go to war or should we hold back? So then they get an answer, go, and you're actually going to be successful.
Yeah. Like yeah. The Battle of Waterloo.
As a matter of fact, actually, the Medrash says, why indeed did the Jewish people deserve so many casualties if on the face of it, they're, it's a valid thing. They have a valid point.
But the
because of Petel Micha. Actually, we learned this in Sanhedrin, I think, that Hashem was very upset. When it comes to Petel Micha standing over there and people and the whole Shevet Dan is worshipping it and whatever, and nobody cares. All of a sudden, you have a boss of a dumb is attacked, and all of a sudden, everybody's up in arms. Something is skewed with your priorities, Hashem says. Anyway, so again, by the way, when we say over here, that Rabbi Eliezer says all of them are chol. So again, some of the Rishonim talk about that. Based on that Tosfos before, that maybe even it means after all. For example, the second time, if Rabbi Eliezer's point is that everything Hashem does, He fulfilled. The second time, it actually says the actual Lashon HaPasuk is Vayivku Lifnei Hashem Ada'era Vayishalu BaHashem Lemer with the name Yudkei Vavkei. So is Rabbi Eliezer saying that those are also names of that those are also referring to Geshkes? On the face of it, maybe yes. On the other hand, the Ramban says impossible. We never find the name Hashem used for any other entity other than Hashem. We said right. So therefore, so the Ramban says maybe what it means, maybe what Rabbi Eliezer means is like this. The Pasuk put in over there the name Hashem rather than the name of whatever Geshke they asked out of respect for the Jewish people. Like you don't want to put in writing for all time the Jewish people were so foolish as to go and ask like Geshke. So therefore, in other words, when we read the word Hashem there, we're meant to understand that this is sort of a euphemism for what instead of what it replacing whatever Geshke they asked, says Rabbi Eliezer. Where's Rabbi Yeshua? Well, that's what Rabbi Eliezer holds. As opposed, because Rabbi Eliezer says it's impossible otherwise. How would Hashem say something and not fulfill it? As opposed to Rabbi Yeshua says, Hashem did say. Hashem said go to war. They went to war. Hashem didn't say whether they're going to be successful or not because they didn't think that. Bach Loina Shabichanu. The last time they thought to check it out. The third time that they checked, they should we go, should we not? And then Hashem approved of what they're doing. Shenema as a positive. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron omer l'fanav b'yom ha'im. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Achayim was standing before the Aaron in those days. He was a kohen gadol. Lamer, and they asked the Urim Tumim as follows: Ha'osifayid losis b'machame in b'nei bin yamin achi. Should I continue to go to war against the members of against the people of Binyamin, against the children of Binyamin, my brother? Im echdal v'gaimer, or should I hold back? So now already they're second guessing themselves. Now they're asking, should we go and win, or should we not, and then hold back? And now Hashem said, go ahead and you'll win. But the first two times they didn't think about
many. Well,
they said im echdal amounts to should we hold back? So should we hold back because we're not going to win? That amounts. And in fact, actually, the Meiri because of that explains a little bit differently. That the first two times the answer from the Urim Tumim was just go and fight. Without saying one way or the other whether you're going to win. And it didn't occur to them, well, wait a minute, the Urim Turim is telling us to go. It didn't say anything about whether we're going to be successful. The third time, it actually said, Ki Macha Et Neno Biyadeh.
Okay, yes.
So the Bichanu, in other words, doesn't refer to the people not asking properly. It refers to they didn't pay attention to the nuances of what the Urim Turim answered the first two times versus the third.
The third,
they actually won, yeah.
No, that, they answered what? They were
that go, and I'll give them over if you ask.
The first two,
they said go, and they didn't think to themselves, wait, he's telling us go, but are we going to be successful or not? Yeah. Okay.
Didn't they realize it by not saying the result?
The first two times they didn't realize. The third time they finally caught on. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says all the names in that connection are Kodesh. It does mean that all the times they actually asked Hashem, not that they ever asked Geshem. Okay. Onward. Kol Shloima Hamurim B'Shir Hashirim Kodesh. Anytime in Shir Hashirim, when it says the name Shloimeh, they're all Kodesh, they're all referring to Hashem, meaning Shir L'misha Shalom Shaloi. For example, Shir Hashirim Asher L'Shloimeh doesn't mean that Shloimeh composed it. It means a song in honor of the one to whom peace belongs, which is Hashem.
But he did compose it.
Shloimeh did compose it, but that's not the primary meaning of Shloimeh, and those pukim mean Hashem. Chutz mizeh, except for the following pasuk near the end, a couple of pasukim from the end of Shir Hashirim. Kaumi shali lefanai, my vineyard is before me. Ha'elaf lachoshla, the whole pasuk goes like this. Kaumi shali lefanai, my vineyard is before me. Ha'elaf lachoshla, 1,000 is for you, Shloima. Or mafayim lenotim as period, 200 for those who guarded its fruit. Well, that's what we have to see. Ha'elaf l'chosh Shloimeh means Shloimeh l'didei, means Shloimeh himself is entitled to 1,000, Shloimeh meaning the human king Shloimeh, or Masayim l'neutrenes period means Rabbanon, 200 for those who guard its food, means the Rabbanon. So there's a number of different explanations among Rishonim what this means, but one of them, the most basic explanation is that what it means is, out of, let's say, every 1,200 people, Shloimeh is entitled to have
1,000 of them, 83% of the people doing military service or other kinds of tasks around the kingdom for him, for his glory and whatever. There has to be, though, at least 1/6 of the people who are the Chachamim who are sitting and learning Torah. So therefore, 200 out of at least 200 have to be the Lotimus period. So the Chachamim who guard the food of Torah, they have to be left. They have to be exempt from military service and other government service and whatever, and be free to learn Torah. So therefore, Shlomo over there would mean the human king Shlomo. By the way, so what does it mean when we say over here that Shlomo is Kodesh? Most of the Rishonim learn that it means, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to erase it. It means that it's a kinui. It means it's a descriptive term for Hashem, just like we said that Hanun and Rachum and so forth are descriptive terms for Hashem.
Then we say Shalom is the name of the Edisha.
So for that reason, you have, I think the Rosh talks about the possibility that maybe over here it is a higher, that I think it's the Rosh talks about, that maybe over here it is on a higher level. Maybe it would actually be considered a name of Hashem, maybe even to the extent of saying that it can't be erased. That's not the accepted understanding in halacha. One other nafkamina would be, let's say, for example, you were to make a shvua by the name Shlomo, would it be valid or not? Again, if you say that Shlomo is an actual name of Hashem, yes. If you say it's a kinui, not necessarily.
So there's a difference between
a
shvua and
shvua. Right, indeed. Okay. The Yesh Omrim at Zechol, Yesh Omrim, on the other hand, also the following pasuk, also the following reference to Shlomo and Sheh Hashem as Chol, where it says, Hinei Mitosa Shel Shlomo, behold, is the bed of Shlomo, Shishim, there's Shishim Giborim, we have said Krishma Shalomita, there are 60 mighty men around it. So in that case, that would mean the human king Shlomo, where there came the point after Ashmedai kicked him off his throne, and then he regained his throne, he's afraid from then on of Ashmedai, so he has 60 mighty men around his bed every night to protect him from Ashmedai and the other Shadim.
They're
the king of the Shadim. Okay, so the question is, Ap Zevel, I'm your boy, yeah. Oh, you say? Anyway, what are you saying? Ap Zevel, I'm your boy, yeah. So what are you saying, then, according to this opinion, that also this pasuk, Hinei Mitosa Shel Shlomo, means Shlomo HaMelech? Needless to say, you would say that the other pasuk, Tami Shalei Lefanei, is also talking about Shlomo. Ella Hodor Amar Shmuel, but what are you going to do with this that Shmuel said? Malchusa Bekot Lachad Mishita Ba'alma, a kingdom that kills 1/6 of the world, meaning of the people in the kingdom, Loimi Amsha, is not to be punished for that. What do you mean by kills them? The Rashi says Van Garya Davardis Amalak, that they put them to work on government projects or whatever, which also includes Tosfos says it also includes therefore military service. So even if you have a 16% casualty rate, that's not enough to say that the king therefore is guilty of genocide or murder or whatever, because they have a right to that based on this pasuk. Shenemar Kami Shalei Lefanei, as the pasuk says, my vineyard is before me. Ha'elef l'cha Shlomo, 1,000 goes to you, Shlomo. Where Shlomo refers to Malchus Derekiah, refers to the kingdom of Hashem. So 1,000 out of every 1,200 are in Hashem's hand. Omasayim l'noturnas period Malchus Dara. 200 are for those who guard the fruit, meaning for the kingdom down here on earth. They're allowed a maximum casualty rate of 200 out of every 1,200. 1 out of every 6. So therefore, in other words, it comes out according to Shlomo. It comes out according to what Shmuel is saying. If I care, the word Shlomo in that pasuk means Hashem. So what do you mean that after also the one about the bed of Shlomo is referring to Shlomo HaMelech, and therefore the one about the vineyard also refers to Shlomo HaMelech? If you're going to say, once you have Shmuel's explanation, Shmuel like a Tanakama like a Yeshemim. Shmuel is not agreeing with either opinion. The Tanakama had said that the pasuk Kami Shalei Lefanei refers to Hashem, refers to Shlomo, the human king. The Yesh Omim say on the face of it are saying that also. Shmuel, on the other hand, is understanding the Shlomo of that pasuk as referring to Hashem. How does it fit? And by the way, there are different other explanations of what exactly Shmuel means by this business about a kingdom that kills 1/6. One thing some of the Mefarshim talk about is that there's a difference between, for example, when a king is executing people, is executing judgment against traitors or whatever, versus, for example, Malchus HaDerekiah would be, for example, even when the Sanhedrin is judging people or a high minister. Then even if they have a much higher casualty rate, even if they have 1,000 out of every 1,200, fine, but that's what the halacha says, even though we learned in Makkos that you're not supposed to have once every 70 years or whatever, but still, that's how it's...
Malchus HaDerekiah, they're banned by that too?
No, in other words, Malchus HaDerekiah, according to that, would mean not just Hashem himself, it would also mean his representative on earth, the based in Shalmata.
Ah.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, again, that Shmuel is understanding the word Shlomo in that pasuk to be referring to Hashem. The Tanakama and the Yesh Omim seem to be referring it to Shlomo. How does that work?
Ella Hachakama. No, what the Yesh Emim mean? The Yesh Emim is Zek Kodesh. No, the Yesh Emim say the one that you quoted before, the Kami Shavi Lefanai, the word Shloima there is Kodesh. It refers to Hashem, which is what Shmuel was saying. The Zerhu Chol Demitase. Which one in Shir Hashirim is the one that's Chol, the one about Shloima's Ben? Which means, in other words, by the way, when the Yesh Emim uses the expression Ach Zeh Chol, what they mean is Ach Zeh, also this one that you mentioned, Ha'elef L'cha Shloima is also Chol. Ach Zeh Chol, also this one that you mentioned is also Chol. What they're saying is Afzechol. Also, this one that you argued is Chol is actually Kodesh. Afzeh. Also, this that you thought is Chol is really Kodesh. Which one is Chol? Hini mechatzah shel Shloima. You have to break apart the words Afzechol. Okay. Shmuel Dama Ki Yeshayim. Therefore, Shmuel is saying like the Yeshayim. Okay. Another one. So the Af would mean also this one that you thought. You thought that it's Chol. I'm telling you, it's actually Kodesh. After it goes on Kami. Which one is Chol? Hini mechatzah shel Shloima. So in other words, we thought that the Tanakhama says there's one Chol and the Yeshayim say two. Now we're saying each one says there's one. There's different one. Kami Shali versus mechatzah shel Shloima. Okay. Next one. Every place in Daniel, Sefer Daniel, where it says the word Melech, or Chol, they're referring to one or another human king, except for the following one is Kodesh, where it says after Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream over there involving you see the statue where the head of it is gold and the next part of it is silver, and the next part of it is copper, etc. And Daniel explains to him that it represents the four major world empires, Babel, Persia, Medi, the Greeks, and the Romans.
That are going to rule sequentially,
one after the other, until they're all destroyed by Mashiach. And so Daniel starts by saying to him, Ant Malka, you king, Melech Malchaya, the king of kings, the Elakoshmaya, this is Daniel speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, you king, Melech Malchaya, the king of kings. One second, that's what we have to figure out. The Elohim, that Hashem in heaven, Malchusa Chisna the Tokh of Yikara Yahavlach, has given you dominion and power and strength and glory. So what does it mean? Chisna means strength. Tokhva means, it's in Aramaic. And he's a Chosen. He's a similar word, Chosen. Anyway, the point is, we shouldn't understand that Daniel is addressing Nebuchadnezzar and calling him Malka Melech Malchaya, the king who is the king of kings. Rather, what he's telling him is, Ant Malka, you king, where did you get your greatness? Melech Malchaya, the king of kings, the Elakoshmaya, who is Hashem in heaven, Malchusa, etc., Yahavlo. So therefore, the first Malka is referring to Nebuchadnezzar, but the second Melech, over there, the one in brackets of you, Melech Malchaya would mean Hashem, who is the king over all human things. So the Melech, Malka would refer to Nebuchadnezzar, Melech would refer to Hashem, Malchaya would refer to the various other things. So the word Melech, the one that we have there in brackets, is referring to Hashem.
So how would it flow?
And Malka, you the king.
Yeah.
Melech Malchaya, Hashem, who is the king of kings, Yelakoshmaya, who is Hashem in heaven, Malchusa Chisna, the Tokhva, the Yikara, Yahavloch, has given you rulership and power, etc. The Yesh Emim Afzeh Kodesh, some say that also the following one is Kodesh, Shenema, you have a couple of chapters later, Nebuchadnezzar has had another odd dream, another scary dream, where he sees this gigantic tree, that then a Malach comes and chop it down, and then tie it up with chains, etc. And Daniel explains to him that the dream represents the famous thing where you're going to go crazy and live among the animals for 7 years until you realize. No, because he needed the dream explained. Yeah. Anyway, so Daniel starts off by saying, after Nebuchadnezzar has described the dream, he says, Mori, my master, Chelma l'sonach opishrei la'orach. Let the dream be for your enemies and let its explanation be for the ones who hate. So, this is Daniel, says to Nebuchadnezzar. You have to ask, Raman Kama. Now, who is he addressing that sentence to? If you're going to say that he's addressing Nebuchadnezzar, instead of this dream falling on you, Nebuchadnezzar, it should fall on your enemies. Some would say, Maiminu, well, who are the enemies of Nebuchadnezzar? Yisrael would be the Jewish people. Melech Kolayit Little Israel? Would Daniel be cursing his own Jewish people? No. So therefore, obviously, we have to understand that the Mori is referring to Hashem. As he's standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar, he says, like with a double entendre, he addresses himself momentarily to Hashem. Hashem, let this dream fall on your enemies and your foes, meaning Nebuchadnezzar. Only you couldn't say so in so many words, but yeah. So therefore, the Yeshayim said the word Mori, my master, over there must refer to Hashem. The Tanakhama, so the Tanakhama who disagrees with that, he says, Sony Israel, Sony of the club, like that. So what are you going to tell me? The Nebuchadnezzar only had Jewish enemies, he had no Goyish enemies. No, Daniel might well have been saying that the dream and its interpretation should end up falling on your Goyish enemies. So therefore, Mori over there could be referring to the Nebuchadnezzar. You, my master, the Nebuchadnezzar, let the dream not fall on you, let it fall on your Goyish enemies. Asher was conquered by that time, but whatever, yeah, okay. So that's that. Okay, now getting back. We said in the Mishnah, V'chol kinuyin in harei l'chayovin. Then we said in the Mishnah that a person is mashbiya, the edim, using any of the nicknames, any of the descriptive terms of Hashem, harei l'chayovin. We said the chaya for shvort eders. Or a mini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. So what we're referring to is we said in the Mishnah again that if he's mashbiya them with a kinui, then they're chayev. And then we said also we had a few other things. We said that a person who curses somebody else with any of these names, he's chayev, and says Reb Meir and the Chachamim are poter. And then we had a few other things, and we had one of the things we had in the Mishnah is you can have where a person says to the Edom, Yakacha Hashem Alekim, may Hashem Alekim strike you if you don't swear, Zuhi Olah Haksuva Batorah. This would be an example of the kind of curse that it says in the Torah. So we have to figure out, is a curse really the same thing as a shvur? Or a mini, I have a contradiction. When the posik of Abraiza says, when we have the posik, the Kohen says to the soita, when he swears to it before he gives it the water to drink, Yitin Hashem Oisach L'Olo L'Shvur, he says, Hashem will make you feel guilty, and you drink from this water. Hashem will make you an object of a curse and of a shvur. My common lema, why does it have to say l'shvur? Why does it say either of these expressions? V'alot v'anem v'eshviyah koyin v'se'isha v'shvur ta'ala. It already says a couple of psukim, it already says earlier in that passage that the koyin shall be swear the woman using the curse, using the shvur of the curse. So why does it have to repeat the words shvur and the word curse later in the passage? The reason is like this: Lepisha Nema v'Shama Kol Ola, because in a different context, in Shavuot Eidus, which is what we're dealing with over here, it says the expression that the Eidim hear Kol Ola, they hear the sound of a curse. Now, how do we know that it includes the Shavuot? Nema Kan Ola, v'Nema Lahalam Ola. Well, we have a Zera Shava between the two words Ola, Malahalam Shavuot, Afkan Shavuot. Therefore, we learn like this: just like over there by the Soita, it involves the Shavuot as well, because it uses both expressions, Shavuot and Ola. Akan Shavuot, the same way over here. When it comes to Shavuot Eidos, it also means it means that there's a Shavuot as well. It's not just an Olah that there's a Shavuot.
The Shavuot is part of the Olah.
On the face of it, it means that you have to have a Shavuot. That's what we have to figure out. Why did our Mishnah say that an Olah is enough? And Malahalam the same, Akan the same, and also just like by the Soita, it involves Hashem's name. He says Yitin Hashem Oisach, etc. Afkan the same. The same way over here, by the Shavuot Ha'edus, it also has to involve Hashem's name. So you see, in other words, the point is that it has to have a Shavuot, and apparently that it has to have Hashem's name. So how are we having Kinuyim in our Mishnah, and how are we having that in Olah is enough?
But we said before that a Shavuot necessarily implies Hashem.
That's that we said according to the Rashba, that just saying the word B'Shavuot implies Hashem's name. But fine, even according to that, you could ask. By the Soita, it's not just enough to say that you'll be an Olah and a Shavuot. You have to actually spell out Yitin Hashem Oisach. So why are we here? Would you not need that?
Right.
Not a problem, because the Braitha goes according to the Chanina Bar Yehudi, the Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanon. The Tanya, the Chanina Bar Yehudi. Since we find in different contexts, in one context, the Torah tells us do swear. For example, Rashi says, when we have later on in the parrot, later on in the chapter, when we talk about Shavuot HaPikadah and Shavuot HaModi B'Mitzvah and so forth, that the Torah says you have to swear. And there are other places where the Torah says not to swear, for example, don't swear falsely.
You have kalels al tekalel, and you have places where the Torah tells you to curse, for example, by the Saita, and also some of the other Rishonim say, for example, on how we and how evil. So you have places where you're told you have to impose a curse, the al tekalel, and then there's places where the Torah tells us you're not allowed to curse. For example, you're not allowed to curse the fellow yid, like the kalel cheresh. Therefore, mahi shova b'shem. So just like when it comes to when you swear, when you're told to swear, it has to be in Hashem's name. The same way when it says don't swear, for example, don't swear falsely, it means it only applies when you're using Hashem's name. And makalo b'shem, just like when it comes to cursing, involves Hashem's name.
The same way. What does it mean?
Loy tekalo b'shem means when it says you're not allowed to curse somebody else, for example, it means davka if you're using Hashem's name. So says Rav Chanina Bar Idi. If you don't use Hashem's name, he would say you're not over. And so the same thing over here in our Mishnah, the same thing in the cases of our Mishnah, if you were to say to the Eid, if you were to be Mashviya, the Eidim of the Kibri, Rav Chanina Bar Idi, you would say it doesn't work.
Because
there's no name of Hashem. V'Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? Igmir Gzeira Shavani Boy Shema Miyachod. They say, we should ask like this. If they learn the same Gzeira Shava, if they use the same Gzeira Shava, if they use the word Allah that we said before, that from by Soita it says Allah, and by Edim it says Allah, Nibor Shem HaMiyuchad, then, well, by the Soita, it's not just any name of Hashem, he actually uses the name Yud-Kevav, okay? So then, by Shavuot HaEdos, it should also require it to be a Shavuot with the Shem HaMiyuchad, Elig Mir Gzeira Shava, and if they're not learning this, it's Gzeira Shava, Allah to Shavuot, Him and Allah, then where anyway do they know that an Allah automatically includes a Shavuot? So where are the Rabbanon get it? So if you're going to explain that on Mishnah, according to the Rabbanon, where are they getting their opinion from? Where are they getting that on the one hand that you can use an Allah, like I said later on in our Mishnah, and on the other hand, you can use a Kinui, or you can use even another name of Hashem, like a Kim or Shakai or whatever, rather than only the name of Kevav,
okay,
like you do by Sota.
If they're
using the Gzeira Shava, then it should go the whole way and say that you have to use the name Yud Kevav, okay?
And what else?
And that's it. And then fine, you could say it could be a Shavuot, it could be an Allah, like you do over there. And on the other hand, if they're saying that you can use any other name, then where are they getting that you can use a Shavuot when the Pasuk says by Edim only Allah? That's the question.
The answer is not the Lomi de Tanya. They learn it like this.
They learn it in a different way. When it says in we learn in a Braisa, when it says Allah, Ein Allah El Alosh and Shavuot. The word Allah actually means a Shavuot. It says the Kohen shall be swear the woman with the Shavuot of the curse. So we see that an Allah and a Shavuot are synonymous. So therefore, when it says V'shama Kol Allah, I don't need any Gzeira Shava or anything to teach us that a Shavuot is included. The word Allah itself, by definition, means a Shavuot. Okay.
The Braisa says that an Allah means a Shavuot.
Ein
Allah El Allah and
Shavuot. However, the Gemara, V'shama Kol Allah. Question is, Hasam Shavuot Sa'olaksim. Yes, but over there you actually have a noun and an adjective, the Shavuot of the curse.
Right.
So it seems like they're two different things. They're not the same thing. No, Hakakama, Allah, no, if the Braisa means like this, when it says the word Allah in connection with the Edim, Ein Allah Ela Bishavuot. And Allah, by definition, means that it is imposed using a Shavuot, through a Shavuot. Thus we see that the Kohen, when he wants to impose a curse, a conditional curse, on the Saita, he does it through a Shavuot. So the same way, in other words, in our thing over here, when it says Allah, when it says the Shama Kohel Allah, it means that it is imposed through a Shavuot. Okay, so then we have to ask, the Minayin Lasset, Allah She'enim HaShavuot, Ka'Allah She'yeshim HaShavuot. So how do we know then that an Allah without a Shavuot is exactly on the same level as an Allah that includes a Shavuot?
That's why
Marsha and some other Rishonim take out and some other Achronim take out those words from it. But okay, fine. Ushvua she'enim ha'olah k'shvua she'yeshim ha'olah. The main point is, how do we know though that a shvua that is not accompanied by an olah should be like a shvua that is? Again, we said in our Mishnah, you don't necessarily have to use an olah, a curse. You could just as well say mashbiachem mani in the name of Hashem or b'shvua, whatever, and it works. So there's no Allah involved over there. The Pasuk says, V'shama Kol Allah. So where are you getting that? It can work without an Allah at all. V'shama Kol Allah. Therefore, we have, the Pasuk says that he hears the voice of an Allah. So now the expression, Kol Allah, is redundant. Of course, an Allah involves a voice. Of course, yes, of course, if you're hearing a voice. Therefore, we can break it down. The Shoma Olah, the Shoma Kol. What we can say is the pasuk is implying that it can be one or the other. You heard a voice, or you heard an Olah. So therefore, it can be one or the other. It can be a Shavua even without an Olah, because that would be covered by the word Kol. Or it can be an Olah without a Shavua. So now we're saying that can be one without the other. Yeah. So we're saying no. So what we did is we used the word. We said that an Olah is imposed through a Shavua based on the Seder, but once we have that, it is also possible to have an Olah without a Shavua. Yes. Once we've established that an Olah usually goes together with a Shavua, and therefore we're able to bring in a Shavua over here, we're able to now understand that the word Kol Olah actually means that we have one or the other.
I don't see how you get from one to the other. If you start saying that it has to be good,
you say that an Olah is the Shavua, is imposed through a Shavua, yes. But once you have that, then you're saying you don't need that actually, because you're saying since you have Kol Olah, since you're saying that you can have either Kol or Olah. So therefore, we if it weren't for the fact that we said an Olah is usually associated with a Shavua, we wouldn't know that the word Kol teaches us a Shavua at all. But once we know that, once we have the word Kol, then once we see that an Olah is associated with a Shavua, now we understand that Kol Olah desynchronized them.
So in other words, like saying when you have Allah, you need either Shavua or Kol.
Well, Kol is Shavua, that's what we're saying. But no, what we're saying. Well, right, what we're saying is if we didn't know that Allah and Shavua are related, we would not know what the word Kol means over here. We wouldn't know what to learn from the word Kol. Now that we see that an Allah and a Shavua usually go together, now we can understand the word Kol as referring to a Shavua. And saying that it means either Vishama Kol or Vishama Allah. Either you heard a Kol without an Allah, or you heard an Allah without a Kol. Either one works.
Either one works.
Either one works. Yeah.